Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to Down to Dunk. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. We're part of the Athletic Podcast Network. With me today is my good friend, Michele Barra. Michele, what's up?
Well, new week, no Thunder games over the weekend, so a little bit of rest, and I watch other teams, which is something that's always helpful in order to see what is going on.
Yeah, I watched Denver, Utah yesterday afternoon, and
I caught part of that game.
Fire all afternoon. It was really fun to watch. Jokic was unbelievable yesterday.
Yeah.
Even against Gobert. He just did whatever he wanted. It didn't matter. That was fun.
Yeah. They had an incredible shooting night. Yeah. And I kept telling myself, well, this is really a 2-3 point game if you account for the awesome percentage they shot with. But in the end, they kept shooting like awesome, and so it was never closer than I think. Well, it got closer, but not. It was never manageable for Utah. Utah played well. The point is that Denver really hit everything, and when a team hit everything, well, it's not your night, and that's
nothing you could do. No. Kind of like the unstoppable force of Russell Westbrook last night against the Brooklyn Nets. And Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Nets.
Yeah, my morning started with a text from Taylor in the chat that was all capital letters, what is happening or whatever. And so I had to catch the end of the game, and it was insane. It was just insane.
It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. They were with 12.3 seconds left. They were down 5.
Yeah.
5 points. Yeah. Then Beal makes a three. Westbrook makes a three. And then Beal gets 2 free throws and it's over. I mean, it was just crazy. The bad pass from Joe Harris. And then, I mean, everything had to go wrong for the Nets. TLC
missed a layup. Was it Garrison Matthews that stole the ball? Was Garrison Matthews that stole the ball?
I believe that's right. That's Fred's guy, too. That's Fred Katz's guy. Garrison Matthews.
Yeah, it was and I also loved that. I mean, I didn't catch the entire game, but I had the feeling that Russ was having a good night in terms of percentage shooting wise, and he still was able to find Rui Hachimura, who at that moment was shooting 1 out of 8 from the field for a wide open three, perfect pass. It was a bullet pass, very very good that. Basically hit Hachimura in the shooting pocket, and he was able to hit a very important three. I mean, at that moment, it was shoot it, we already lost the game. But no, it was kind of an important moment, and I'm glad that Russ is still able to do this stuff. I mean, I really hope he like get it together somehow.
Yes, please, because it was getting so depressing. I produce Fred's podcast. It was becoming the saddest NBA show on our network easily, just because it just felt so hopeless. You know, it was turning into like the Beal trade pod, but which is a really good show, by the way. Fred recorded with Matt Moore over the weekend, and it was really good, worth your time. But it's good to see them win, because this is what they're supposed to be, a good, fun team. And so hopefully they can actually become that.
Well, if Russ becomes, I don't know, shall we use a round number, like 80% of what he was last season? Shall we use those numbers?
Yeah, sure.
Then it's a completely different team. And mm-hmm. because like when Russ has the offense going, then you need to account for him, for Beal, for Bertans, for like whatever. And so whoever. And so it's it becomes a completely different team. And again, even for the Thunder pick, having Washington ahead of them would be extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, without a doubt. Let's go over to the chat and see who's joined us this morning or afternoon or wherever you are. We've got Jay from Singapore. We've got David Litikov in here. We've got Christos from Greece, as always. David is from Melbourne, Australia. He said it is 11:20 p.m., staying up late, David. Really appreciate you guys joining in on the stream. We have Ollie from Perth. Lots of people from Australia. We have Zachary from Croatia. Mr. Stees caught us live. Thanks so much for joining, guys. Miroslav from Germany. Felipe from Brazil. Thanks so much for joining. Miguel Davila from the Philippines, as always. We really appreciate all you guys listening and joining in on the chat. Feel free to throw questions in there as we go here. We're just going to go over Thunder stats because we always say we have to wait about 20 games in, right, in order for these games to count with regards to statistics. Seth from Alabama, thanks for joining. And it's almost been 20 games. Yeah. After when we talk next week, it'll be over 20 games. And so I feel like it's time to start considering that these stats mean something. Mm-hmm. And that it's not just a small sample size anymore. So big overarching stats that you can take a look at is the Thunder are 29th in net rating, -7.1. A defensive rating of 112.3, which is 23rd in the league, and then an offensive rating of they're 27th in offensive rating at a 105.2.
Yeah.
So this is not good, Michele. This is not the profile of a good team. And currently, with their record of 8-10, they have the profile of an overachieving team.
Yeah, and there is a pretty good explanation for that. OKC had 9 games that were decided by a very slim margin and that you can qualify as clutch games. And
yeah.
Similarly to what they had last season, even if they let go Chris Paul and Dennis Schroeder, which were amazing players in the clutch, they kept one of the players that was very good in the clutch last season, which is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, that is currently using almost 50% of the possessions in clutch time. He has a 50% usage almost in clutch time situation, and still, OKC is good. They won 6 out of 9 clutch games, which is something that every statistical mind, like you can hear Seth Partnow talk, you can hear and like the guy you want. I mean, everyone will say the same thing. They should revert back to a certain mean, but we had many seasons where teams just were good in the clutch, and you don't know why, and you cannot use it to project how it will go in the future. So about the clutch stats, I have here a file where I basically took some notes. And Dort, Shea, Hill, and Horford are plus 19 in net rating in clutch time situation, which is very good. Shea does not have very good shooting percentage in the clutch. It's like below 40%. But still 54% through shooting, which is something that basically puts the free throws into the mix. And so you have almost 1.02 points per possession, something like that, where you're basically efficient enough. And Dort is shooting 50% from three in clutch situations. And so this is a team that, with the good players, is good in the clutch. And as long as you have those players to play those minutes, they will probably win many games, many clutch games. Because, I mean, you have two good veterans, a good player that manufacture offense for everyone in Shea, and good defenders and shooters. I mean, Bazley is probably the worst in the clutch. He's not having a good season overall in terms of shooting. But this team is just a team that plays the right way. Just look at the shot chart from NBA.com. You will see very, very good shot distribution. And those things clearly matter. We said it last year a lot of times. OKC had a tendency to get a certain shots for the entire game, which were shots with low variance for them and good shots in general. Like for Chris Paul, a mid-range shot is a very good shot. For Danny Schroeder, it was a very good shot last season. And so if you have those, then you have something to get to in clutch time. This team is not a mid-range team. They don't want to use mid-range, but they still have Shea that can get to the basket whenever he wants, and they have two very good veterans plus Dort. And if you give them a three, then you have a very good shot. And they basically generate those shots for the entire game. So for them, clutch time is just go over there to the shots that you like, to the player that you know that will probably have the best chances to hit those shots. And so, yeah, this is my read on the current record. A little bit long, sorry.
No. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense. If you just go through these outcomes. I mean, they beat Brooklyn handily earlier in the season. Yeah, they beat New York. I mean, they destroyed New York. The Knicks, which seems a little strange after I've watched them several times. It's like that the Thunder got the version of the Knicks everybody thought they were going to be kind of thing and didn't get anything else. And then they beat Orlando. Handily in Orlando. In Orlando.
Which, those were games, sorry for interrupting you, where OKC basically had very good, for maybe not the Knicks, where we had the Diallo moment, but for the other games, we had shooting nights above 40% from three, which is something that variance will allow you to have. You'll have shooting nights, horrible shooting nights, and very good ones. And if you have a very good shooting night, you can beat basically anyone.
Yeah, the only close game that they lost was to Utah. They lost by one to Utah. That was it. And then you go through the other close games. I mean, Shea hits the shot in the first game of the season against Charlotte to win the game. I mean, that was a big-time moment in the clutch. They beat the Pelicans by 1 point in New Orleans. That was a crazy moment. They came back to beat Chicago. I mean, that game at home was nuts. And that's the thing about them at home is that they stink at home. They do not play well.
Yeah, which is weird.
It is very weird. I don't know if it's because the Thunder pump in so much crowd noise. It's quite annoying. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it is about
that. Are they doing it on purpose?
Are they doing it on purpose? Maybe. It's like Sam's like, hey, crank it up. They're like, Sam, it's hurting my ears. Louder. Louder. Yeah, I don't know, man. And then they beat Portland in a very close game. And then they beat Phoenix. Like, that wasn't all that close, but still like clutch time type of situation where they ended up coming up with it. And I mean, there's a lot of luck on their side. And then you go through the losses. And they're big. They're big time. They got crushed by Orlando, crushed by the Pelicans. I mean, they lost 113-80 to the Pelicans, which almost seems like an impossible task. They got killed by Miami in Miami. San Antonio crushed them. The Lakers absolutely crushed them. Denver crushed them. The Clippers killed them. The second game of the Clippers was, they had a chance. The Thunder had a chance in that
one. Yeah, so I think that both of them. That one and the one against the Spurs were consider to have moments where they were close 5 minutes with 5 minutes to go. Because I think that the Spurs got a little bit close and then it was basically, again, a pretty substantial margin. But there was a moment late in the game where they were still close enough, where the NBA statistics probably consider that as a clutch game.
Yeah. And then they lose by a billion to Brooklyn when the Nets score 147 in regulation the other night. So, again, I think this is just we've got, as far as, like, record goes, as far as, like, where they're going to be in this tanking situation, I still think that we have some time because, I mean, these games, if just half of those games go the way that stats probably say they should go, right, then we're not worried about the Thunder's record with regards to getting a top pick. There's just, like, no reason to stress about that. And because they have gotten lucky and they have made some shots and they have executed well, it's, you know, it's a little dicey, which for some people is great. And for people that want long-term sustained success for this team, it's kind of like, oh, boy, can you guys, can we just take a few points, shave a few points off the board here, guys?
Yeah, to me, the two bad wins, that there's no such thing as a bad win. So
they've been, here's the thing about them is that they've been enjoyable to watch.
Yeah.
In most games when they lose big, it's like Maledon was really fun the other night against Brooklyn, even though they're getting killed. There's fun spots always with this team when you're watching. Like Pokuševski can have some moments and Maledon's fun, and Shea's been incredible, and Dort's been great. I mean, there's always these bright spots within here, and they're fun to watch. And, you know, when I'm watching the game in real time, there's a pretty big part of me that wants them to win these games. And it's more fun to sit and root for them to win these games. But you have to know, like, you have to see the big picture with this. Yeah. Because it is way more fun for me to, especially when I'm sitting at home on the couch, it is way more fun for me to sit and root for them to win.
Yeah.
Like nobody wants to sit and root for your team to lose. Like that's not fun. Like nobody wants to do that. But you have to know that if you truly want long-term big time success, like that's what the Thunder are aiming for, then they have to lose, and they have to lose a lot of games. And It's just the way that it is. It's the NBA that set this up. If you want to be mad at anybody, you can be mad at the NBA for the way that they've set this up.
Yeah, and I think that if you, again, it's not rooting for a team to lose, but the win against Portland and Phoenix are kind of those wins that you want a competitive game, but you need to lose against those teams if you want to have a bottom five, bottom 10 record. I think that this is what you need to have in the end. Again, you cannot ask Shea to be bad in clutch moments. You need him to be great in clutch moments. You need him to go out and say, "Well, win this game for us," which is something that this is what you should do.
It's great experience for him. Like these are great experiences for him and for Lou. Yeah. It's really good. Like this, they've had some really great situations so far for development, and that's the thing that the Thunder do so well is development. I think they've helped develop Shea. I think that Chris Paul was a big part of that, and I think the organization also empowering him is a huge part of his development. And Wednesday, our topic with Alex will be All-Star candidacy. Like, does he have a legit chance to be an All-Star? And like, take a look at all the players in the West and, you know, all that. So we'll be talking about that Wednesday. But Lou Dort has been a crazy story with regards to development and what he's been able to do. Baisley is the same. I think you can kind of see it with Teo. Even Isaiah Roby, who has played a lot for this team so far and helped and been in situations where he's been able to, you know, have an opportunity to help them win, I mean, that's a guy that was just, he didn't play at all last year's rookie season. Yeah. Some of that was injury related. But the Thunder kind of identified who he is and what he can do. And it's, you're a center. And I kind of thought when he came into the league, and even whenever he's traded to the Thunder, I thought the idea was that he was a wing.
Yeah.
But I think the Thunder like figured out pretty quick, like, oh, you're a center. That's what you are. That's what you're going to be. If you're going to be in the NBA, that's how you're going to function.
Yeah, or at least this is the place that he can play minutes in, and it's fine. I was reading the chat, and Mr. T. Steez says, yeah, you guys look confused. Well, we are not confused, or at least I'm not confused about what I want from this team. The point is, this team is kind of playing a confusing season because they are playing very good basketball, very, very good basketball. It's not common for a team that is assembled to lose games, which is what this team is, to play such a well-organized basketball. I was mentioning it before, the shot chart is perfect. The way in which they play is perfect for a team to win. They are maximizing their chances to win, which is, again, you cannot ask them not to, but we are also trying to look 3 months from now where they may have six teams that are worse than them because they are in worse situations, like the Timberwolves. You don't want to be the Timberwolves, but the Timberwolves will have a better chance at Kate Cunningham, probably, if they can stick with the top three pick that they owe to Golden State. So it's a difficult situation, and maybe take care of itself when and if they trade George Hill and Al Horford. But anyway, enough with the confusing thoughts about this season. I think that there is a category that we should discuss because it's very interesting, and it's rebounding. The team is bad at rebounding the basketball in general, especially the offensively.
Have the worst rebound percentage in the league?
And the second to last in offensive rebound per game. So and the first rebounder that you have for OKC is Al Horford, that is basically not in the top 30 of rebounders. But then you look at the transition stats, and I remember us discussing for the past three seasons that Billy Donovan's idea was that you can be aggressive in offensive rebounds and keep a very good transition defense. And there are other teams that basically decided not to go for offensive rebounds and have a very good transition defense. Well, Degnold seems to be of the second crop. He's not going to get offensive rebounds because A, he doesn't have a premier offensive rebounder. And B, he really cares about transition defense. And this is actually happening. Like, OKC is 23rd in the league in transition opportunities allowed, which is very good. You need to see at the opposite level, of course. The first team is the one that allows the most transition opportunities. And they are also bottom three, or like top three if you want to look at it in a positive way, in points allowed per transition opportunity, which is very, very interesting. So this is one of the keys at why they are not awful. They could be bottom five defensive team, even bottom three defensive team, if it was not for this transition efficiency, because they are bad in post-ups. They are okay in other stuff, but they are very good in transition. So this is something that is a clear coaching staff decision, and it's working.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
I tweeted yesterday that they're 9th in pace, 8th in turnover percentage, and they take just a crap ton of threes.
Yeah.
Almost 45% of their shots are threes.
Yeah.
And so that leads to just, as we've seen, a high variance. You know, if you're not turning the ball over, if you're playing really fast means getting extra possessions. You're just giving yourself a chance is what you're doing every single night when you're doing that. Sometimes it's going to go very poorly. We've seen that. And then sometimes you're going to really give yourself a chance to stay in games that maybe you shouldn't be in. And I think that's what the Thunder have done so far. Seth Justice asks, if we cannot tank with this team, a bottom three record, I would argue that to call it a year of a tanking season, it doesn't mean that you have to have a bottom three record. You don't have to be a complete embarrassment. If they're in the bottom five or bottom six, you still give yourself a shot to get up there. Really, they were looking for a top five pick. Yes, you'd like to have a top three pick. Absolutely. You'd like to have the number one pick if you can. But really, when you're talking historically about where the sweet spot is in the draft, it really extends out to the top five. And so I think the Thunder would like to have a top five pick, certainly. So top three is ideal. Top five, still okay, still considered probably tanking season. And I think they can still get there. And then he says, what does Sam do? Do we change our perspective? Shea and Lou will only get better. They do not. I don't think that there's a whole lot that this team could do to change their perspective, because the goal is to win an NBA championship. Mm-hmm. And if you want to win an NBA championship, this is not the team that you build around. This is not the team that you try to do something with. Like, this isn't it. So you still try to get a top five pick, and then maybe you're able to get rid of Horford and Hill, and then you don't re-sign Muscala, and you know, there's lots of things that you could do get there next year and not be as good.
Yeah, and there are also other things that you can do to get there. I know that it sounds stupid, and I advocate for this not to happen, the things that I'm going to say, but suppose that the Timberwolves are the team with the number one pick. And we all know about Cade, we all know about everything, but maybe it's not number one, it's number two. So Cade is out of the picture, but you have Stanley Mobley, you have Kuminga, you have Jalen Suggs, you have Green, you have like all the others.
Mm-hmm.
What about Shea? What do you do with Shea? Do you keep him or you move him for the number two, for the number one pick or number two pick? He could have like an all-star type of year, even without being an all-star. And the T-Wolves want to win. They really want to win. I think that everything is on the table. If you trade Shea, they will have the top three pick in 2022. That is a certainty. And then you have a different core. This is an option. An option that was in place this season, I think. They could have LaMelo Ball if they wanted to. I think that trading Shea was an option. Maybe not something that they put on the table, but I'm sure in their war room or whatever, draft room, they had this conversation. And they said, well, no, for LaMelo Ball, we don't do it. But who knows what happens? So it's not that if Lu Dort and Shea are that good, then you think that drafting the number eighth guy in this draft will always put you away from your goal, which is drafting a blue chip prospect, then you do stuff to get a blue chip prospect. Yeah. You do it.
I would not put it above the management to do something like that.
And also, if you see that Shea is enough for you to, like, if you see James Harden and Shea, then maybe you call the T-Wolves and say, well, what if I give you four picks for Karl Towns? Because I want that guy with Shea, because he will be like, Shea can give 10 threes to Cat. Like, mm-hmm. they can go in that direction. Cat is not probably a number one guy.
I think it's clearly not. I also don't, I don't know.
I'm just making like an example. It's not Cat necessarily, but
I would think that they would rather call them and say, hey, we'll give you four picks. We'll give you our seventh pick and four future first round picks for number two.
Yeah, and maybe they want Lou Dort because they want to fix their defense. I don't know. You can
I think options. That's more likely than there's just a lot of chatter about Karl Anthony Towns amongst Thunder fans, and I would just hit the brakes pretty hard on that one. That's all.
I mean, my point was they have options to do whatever they want. They don't need to be. There's not one single path. They have mm-hmm. multiple paths, and they can do basically whatever they want. Back on the stat train, if I may, I want to give like a few stats on the play types. You can go and watch and read the stats on NBA.com or wherever. Mm-hmm. I think that something that surprised me a little bit is, well, let's put it this as a question. Mm-hmm. Where do you think OKC ranks in ISO per game, in both in terms of volume and efficiency? Don't give me a number, just give me top whatever and top whatever.
You got to be bottom five in ISOs in the league, right?
Attempts?
Yeah.
And efficiency?
Middle of the pack? I don't know.
They are middle of the pack in efficiency, but they are top 10 in attempts. Per NBA.com.
Interesting.
Yeah. Either I got that wrong, and I will check while we mm-hmm. While we talk, because I was very, very, very surprised by that number. And
yeah.
But then I thought that over the past 10 games, Shea really put like a lot on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if that is something that really changed from the beginning. Maybe they mixed up pick and roll and stuff like that.
They would have had to have taken a ton, because that's what I was thinking. Like probably the first 5 to 10 games, they didn't have hardly any.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let me see. Play types, isolations, possessions per game. No, I got it right. If you go. Mm-hmm. It's Houston first, Portland, Brooklyn, top three, Los Angeles four, Clippers fifth, Bucks, Boston's, and then Oklahoma City at 8.3 per game, which is not a lot, but still, I was kind of surprised. Maybe they updated the stats from this morning, but it's still mm-hmm. kind of interesting to me that Shea in particular is trying to do a little bit more in ISO. And also guys like Lou Dort. Dort is taking a little bit more of an offensive role, and he creates his own shots sometimes. And maybe those are not ISO every time. Maybe it's a closeout that goes into an ISO because of the way in which they track statistics. But still, the second stats that I want to, that is basically similar, it's OKC is 10th in pick and roll ball handler opportunities. But it's 23rd. In efficiency, and the first thing that you can say is, well, Shea has to do a better job. No, this is not. It's not the case,
right?
It's not the case. It's not Shea, and I filtered that, and basically, Shea is at 1.04 points per possession in pick and roll, which is very, very good. It's 80th percentile in the league. And basically is even better with a very low number of opportunities. But then every other guy is awful at that. Hamidou Diallo, 2.1 possessions, 0.78. Pokuševski, 1.5, 0.21. Theo Maledon, 2.5 possession, 0.67. Lou Dort, 0.8. George Hill, 0.8. Justin Jackson, 0.8. So besides Shea and Bazley, no one is efficient in creating from in pick and roll situations. And and basically my read on that is, if you give Shea better teammates, he would be a pick and roll master. Just giving like other players that are a little bit better than what they have right now, and Shea can mold himself into a pick and roll monster.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paolo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, just for perspective on the pick and roll. So I filtered this to be minimum 150 possessions. So these are guys that are using a ton of pick and roll possessions in the league. There's not that many of them that are doing this. He ranks fourth among like high usage pick and roll ball handlers at 1.04, like you mentioned. The only players that are ahead of him: Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, and Bradley Beal. That's it.
That is insane. That is completely insane. And
the players
Shea,
that are below him that are high usage, that Luka, some of these guys are well below: Zach LaVine, Luka Doncic, Trae Young, Malcolm Brogdon, D'Angelo Russell, De'Aaron Fox, and Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell has used a lot of pick and roll possessions, 0.80 points per possession. De'Aaron Fox, 0.85. And then like Trae Young and Luka are both 1.01.
Which is
1.04.
Awesome. Yeah, which I wouldn't say below even. It's so close that you can say it's in the same ballpark.
Yeah, they're in the same. Yeah, they have been in the same category of pick and roll ball handlers this season. Shea's been slightly better than Trae Young and Luka Doncic. I think that's a crazy stat for Shea.
Yeah, and this is why sometimes I think, well, are we really, really sure that he is not in the same category as those players? I know that the answer is yes, because Trae Young is one-man show in Atlanta. And there are moments where Shea is not there yet. But boy, oh boy, this guy is efficient. He knows what to do. And pick and roll is the offense in modern NBA. And he's not getting enough from a weapon that I'm sure it will develop, which is the three-pointer.
Yeah, I'll say this. I'm not 100%. Excuse me, 100% sure that he and Trae are not in the same conversation. If not, Shea being better, I'm not convinced. Luka, we've seen enough from Luka Doncic in his entire professional career to say, okay, yeah, like, he's the guy. We don't need to have that conversation. But with regards to Trae Young and everybody else on this list, I would say that I don't know that Shea isn't one of the best or the best of all of those guys, which says something. And it's, I mean, the Hawks started out really hot, and then they've cooled off, and they're just kind of an okay team. And I don't know, man. If you just switch Shea and Trae Young, Are the Hawks better, worse? Like, where? What would you think about that situation for him?
I don't know.
Tons of shooting, a really nice pick and roll partner in Capella.
Oh, and I thought you were mentioning Collins. I'm not a fan, as you know.
Oh yeah, we don't have to talk about we don't have to talk about John Collins. But
for some reason, he's not my cup of coffee. He's just not. And
I would say that he's not a lot of people's cup of coffee, because I think he would have been traded by now if he was, or he would have been extended.
Yeah,
by them, had that been the case.
Yeah, but these stats really, it's not that blew my mind, but because I kind of knew that Shea was a very, very good player, and the thing that I mentioned before about Cat, I know that you don't like the idea, but imagine give Shea a pick and roll partner that can do everything, that can be as efficient as Isaiah Roby, who is very efficient in pick and roll situation when he rolls, and as efficient or more efficient than Al Horford when he pops. It's just a nightmare. It would be a nightmare for defenses to have such a pairing. And maybe that guy is even Mobley. I don't know. I'm not saying that it should be Cat, but imagine give Shea such a weapon that, because with Horford, you know that it's a pop, or a pop and or a pop. With Cat or guys like that, Anthony Davis, you don't know. He can do everything. He can catch lobs. He can create his own from the elbow. He can space up to the 3.9 from three. If you give Shea this kind of pick and roll partner, and I know that we already described that and discussed that a lot of times, those numbers will go up. And if he's a top five pick and roll player in the league, he's a star, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he needs to get his free throw rate up. He just needs to get to the line more.
Yeah.
If he can do that, because that's one of the big differences between he and Trey. Like, Trey shoots 10 free throws a game.
Yeah.
And at a higher percentage than Shea shoots. I mean, he's 88% from the line. Like, that's it. Like, that's stardom. Like, that's how you get there. Like, Trey's stats this year, 27 points per game, 8 assists, 4 boards a game. And then Shea is 21.9 points per game, 6.4 assists, 5.4 boards. Shea is better efficiency overall. Like, he's 51% from the field to the 42% from Trey.
Yeah.
He just takes better shots. You know, Trae Young is one of those like bad shot makers in the league. He's going to take a lot. He's going to take a lot of shots too. I mean, he takes 18 shots per game.
By the way,
14.9.
Mm-hmm. Since we are a pod on The Athletic, please, all of you, as soon as this ends, go and read Seth Bart Now, first article on shot quality and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because it's something that everyone should read. If you want to know about basketball, it will be a series. So the first article just put the basis, and when I read that, I said, "Wow, this is what I should have done with Chartside, my former project, like assessing shot quality." We kind of did it with passing, but with shot quality, it's something that you can really understand. And I think that article was really good. I have a game for you. Are you ready?
Ooh, always ready.
Please tell me, in order, the best three-point shooters over the past 5 games for OKC.
Over the past 5 games?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Tail Maladon?
He is number three in the league. He's third. He counts. He's not the best, though.
Okay. Mike Muscala?
He's fifth. There are seventh. By 7 player, by the way, in this list.
Okay. Lou?
Lou is last.
Okay.
Can you guess the percentage?
30%.
26.5. on 6.8 attempts. Yep. Do you want to sell your bet or not?
No, no, no. This was coming. He wasn't going to shoot 40% from three all year. Like, mm-hmm. That was just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go ahead. Who's number one?
Shai?
Nope. Shai is number four at the very good 40% with four 3-point per game attempts.
Hami?
Hami is not on the list. Come on.
Okay, good.
Baby Powers.
Oh, gosh. Al. So we're
talking 81.8%.
Dude, he's hitting everything. He looks so good at the beginning of that Brooklyn game when they were and they were leaving him open.
Yeah.
But he was hitting everything. Yeah, he's up to 41% on the season.
Yeah. Great, great. This is trade value going up.
Yeah, he's up over 12 points per game.
Yeah.
On the season, 7.5 boards, 2.5 assists, 41% from three. Yeah. He's looked pretty good.
Let's put it this. We are both fathers, and we really know that there's no such things as baby powers. But there is, because, well, you are, especially if you are close to your important other, then it's stressful. But it's not as stressful as the month before, when you don't know, and it can happen every single day, and your mind goes there, and then there, and then there. So maybe this is why Horford was bad to start the season. Let's call it. It's that way. By the way, George Hill was number two in the list.
Yeah, I mean that's part of the Thunder front office's problem, right? Is that they've got these vets that are playing well, that are helping the team, and they play the right way. I mean, that's to me that's the biggest thing, is that there's no selfish gunner on this team. Period. I mean, you could say Hami is, but you know, Hami doesn't use a crazy amount of possessions, so. Yeah, I can tell by your face you might think that it's crazy.
No, it's not crazy, but I want him to pass.
I mean, he's... Oh, he won't. You can just look at his face when he's got the ball and just know when he's going to pass it. You can just literally just watch him tonight, everybody. I don't know if it feels the same on TV, but in person, he just gets this tunnel vision, and it's a look on his face. You can see it.
Tell that.
Over the past few games. Oh, yeah, Hami's not passing. There's no way Hami's passing unless somebody just walls him, you know, in the mid-range, which they won't wall him in the mid-range. But if somebody does, then he'll pass. But
they
he's
will open
run
their
to
arms.
A wall.
They will open their arms.
Yeah, they'll say, they'll back up. They'll James Go Harden ahead. Turn around. Man, that James Harden possession on Hami, did you see it? He's in the corner. And he was facing him when Hami received the pass. And James looked at him for 1 second and just immediately turned around to look at the rim. And I'm really glad Hami made that. But it was just pure disrespect to Hamidou Diallo.
Yeah. And again, I mentioned it to John on Thunder After Dark. And we're saying, well, I know why he wants to get to that mid-range. I know. If he hits that to, say, 44-45% mark, then he becomes a totally different player. And I get that. He wants to be that player. He wants to open lines for himself because he knows how good he is at the basket. And he is. He's really, he really is. But my point is, if you use that space to survey the floor and find a good pass, it's as efficient as a mid-range shot, maybe even more. If they know that he will look to the corners or to the guy who popped, then the defense will stretch anyway. And you will have just one man there that you can beat. It's not just the mid-range. You can do multiple stuff. Like, look at James Harden. He doesn't take mid-rangers at all. Mm-hmm. People know that he can take that, but they are not guarding him anyway. Like, you have the same spacing that James Harden generates because you are so good at the basket. The defenses are basically sagging back. And the way in which you don't have an extra man is to see the corner. You can just focus on that single thing. Just look for the corners and
even
maybe
just one corner.
Yeah, and maybe look to revert the floor.
Yeah,
maybe look to revert the like to pass on the weak side once every I don't know 2, 3, 4, 5 times.
Yeah,
just work on that pass, and it will open everything. Because it's like that. If the guy knows that you will look at the corner, then he will stay away from you, and you have enough space to go at the basket.
Yeah, I mean, Hami has developed and become a better player this year. There's no doubt in my mind that he has. He still just has these really big flaws that are keeping him from becoming like a nice rotation player for a team. And the passing is one of them. Like, he doesn't have to be a great shooter to be effective. He just doesn't. He's too athletic. And he's actually got a decent enough handle for him to be effective. He just has to be able to pass and make the right decisions. And that can come in time still. I think that clearly it's not natural for him. Clearly that's not his inclination. But I do think it can be learned.
Yeah.
I do think that simple things like that can be learned. And so it's something to watch for as the season goes along. Like, Hami, I think that they put a lot into his development, and I think that they're hopeful that he can become more. And that's, I mean, development is really the reason that we're in this position at all. We're talking about this team winning too many games, is that this team is just really good at development. That's just the way that they are. Okay, let's preview the week real quick, and then we can, then we'll bounce. So the Thunder have a strange week here in OKC. They have 4 games all in Oklahoma City, only versus 2 teams. They play Houston on Monday and Wednesday. The red-hot Houston Rockets, by the way, who have the best defense in the NBA since the James Harden trade. They won 5 in a row coming to OKC tonight. Should be a very... I'm very intrigued by what they do, and to watch them and to see... You know, Christian Wood in person for the first time. Just can't wait to see it. And then they get Minnesota on Friday and Saturday in a back-to-back. And Towns might be back, because that would be 3 weeks. Friday is 3 weeks from the time that he was diagnosed with COVID.
Yeah.
He was diagnosed on January 15th. So I would honestly be a little bit surprised if he didn't play in both of those games.
Yeah.
Or at least in one of them. And maybe he doesn't have his... Maybe he's, you know, not 100% yet and can only play
one
for
sure.
Of them. But that changes the equation for Minnesota quite a bit. They've been super terrible without Towns, which you should be super terrible without your best player. I think the Thunder would be super terrible without Shea.
Yeah.
Out there. So
time to rest him, by the way. He's doing too much.
Oh, get some rest, Shea.
Yeah, at least one game against Minnesota. Just rest him once. No, it's not going to happen.
Never do that.
My prediction is, sadly, 2-2.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I think that, I mean, and we could even be looking at a 3-1 situation.
Oh,
I really
no.
I believe that. I think Minnesota, especially if they don't have Towns, could be a cupcake, man. I think they split Houston, and I think there's a good chance they get both these Minnesota games.
Yeah. Which will get us to the record, I think.
That's 500, right?
Yeah, that is a 500 after... I remember us discussing when should we be worried. And I think I mentioned 12-12. If they are 12 and... They could be... Are they 9-10 right now?
8-10.
8-10. Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's 11-11. Okay.
Yeah.
Scary as well.
Also scary, but then it's Lakers, Denver. Milwaukee, Portland, Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And then Cleveland, Miami, San Antonio, Atlanta, Denver to end the month. And they'll get a win in there.
Yeah, 1 or 2. Yeah, you say, I mean, yeah, you can be pretty down. But anyway, I think that 2-2 is actually, especially because I think that they will rest someone. And if they don't have 4-4 against, and Kat is there, I don't see Roby.
If Kat's there and they don't have Horford, then they will likely lose because they probably won't play Horford Saturday.
Yeah, maybe they will do the double rest on the second night and with Hill and Horford.
Well, and George Hill's got the thumb injury. Who knows what his status is? But we haven't even talked about Tao and how he's played with the starters.
Oh, he's very good.
He's been great.
Yeah,
he's been great. It's a it's a situation that suits him at this point in his career very well because he's not the primary ball handler.
Yeah.
In that situation. And there's space for him to shoot.
Yeah.
And he's another one that's benefiting from playing with Al Horford. I think Bazley has benefited greatly from playing with Al Horford.
Yeah.
Just because he's such a good passer and he's a guy you can run the offense through. It gives you just multiple options in running the offense. And some of the sets that they run where Horford's got the ball, really, and Bazley's one of the best cutters on that starting unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever he's cutting, Horford's going to find him. And you saw that in the last game.
Yeah.
So I think that's it. To me, Horford is a huge part of Bazley, like being on or off track.
Yeah.
I think he benefits greatly from playing with high IQ players.
Yeah. And this is just, I know, I don't want to be too harsh on Robbie, but starting Robbie messes with Bazley quite a lot because he doesn't know where to be. And he knows how to run a pick and roll, but sometimes he doesn't know when he's supposed to run a pick and roll. Basically, the offense is clunky. And it's much better when it's Muscala. And I know that you don't want to start Muscala because, I mean, you don't. You just want to have some sort of spacing for Diallo because that is also a problem if you have Diallo and Roby on the court. And so you try to give balance to those units because you kind of want to have Diallo with the ball. And even if you don't have Muscala there, it's just impossible for him. So I know there are issues, but with Orford, it's quite different. And again, you need someone to guard Cat. If Cat is like even able to shut threes, then if you don't have Orford, like, it's going to be a mess.
Yeah, it will without a doubt be a mess. Thanks so much for listening to our show. You can follow Michele on Twitter at Mike Ubera. You can follow me on Twitter, Andrew K. Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/downtodunk to get The Athletic for $3.99 a month. It's an outstanding deal. It's super cheap, and I don't think you'll get a better value on the internet. So please go do that. Hope you guys have a great Monday, and we will talk to you guys again on Wednesday.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.